Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Joe tipped me off to a great story on techdirt.com, and it's about civil asset forfeiture. And it seems that every time we think we've heard everything there's to be heard on this topic, something even crazier comes up. And now a man is suing multiple Department of Justice agencies for failing to return seized cash that they told him they had no interest in keeping. So the man's money was taken and somehow wound up in the government somewhere. And every time he contacts somebody about who's got my money, I want it back, they go, well, we don't want it. We've got it, but we don't want it. Just keep working on it. And it's that Byzantine, Kafka-esque nightmare where you wonder, are they just messing with the guy? Or what's going on? But it also shows you another aspect, another facet of civil asset forfeiture that makes this whole process so wrong. Tim Cushing wrote it again for techdirt.com. It's a great website. Civil asset forfeitures remain a government... Civil asset forfeiture remains a garbage government theft operation. Always has been, always will be. The government can just take stuff, make up a reason for taking it, and then hope a system that's deliberately complicated and expensive will prevent citizens from trying to reclaim their property. Great writing. In some cases, they can't even be bothered to make up a better reason than government policy. It's our policy. It's our policy. I remember reading a book a long time ago about how to negotiate. And one guy said, if you want to make something that, you know, to appear non-negotiable, he goes, make a sign. Put up a sign where they carve it into a plaque and you mount it on the wall behind the counter. No refund, see? It's on the sign. Government policy, same thing. And even when the government's decided not to keep the property, it still makes it almost impossible for the owner to get it back. That's what's happened to a guy named Willie Cooks from Alaska. The government took $60,000 from him at the Fairbanks Airport, and despite claiming it does not intend to pursue forfeiture, has held on to the money for over a year. And what makes this interesting is they go, we're not pursuing forfeiture, but they've already got the money. And so they're saying, well, we seized the money. The forfeiture is the legal proceeding later. But the problem is that they're not pursuing forfeiture, but they don't give it back. There's no distinction there. So Cook is now suing. And the only reason it was taken from him was because he chose, perhaps unwisely, to carry it with him on a flight to Las Vegas. And here's the thing. Why would anybody bring cash to Las Vegas? I mean, if you can think of a good reason, please put it in the comments below. I've been to Vegas. I cannot imagine why somebody would want to bring cash to Las Vegas. What? Does Vegas even want your money? So heading through the checkpoint, Cooks was stopped at the TSA, of course. The TSA saw Cooks' money and informed the airport police. The airport police then questioned Cooks, took his money, and turned it over to the DEA. Now, why did this happen? Well, policy. And from the lawsuit, it says, upon information and belief, TSA follows a practice, policy or standard, of seizing or causing to be seized cash carried by travelers of $10,000 or more. Now, we've discussed this also. Cash transactions of $10,000 or more in cash transactions are often reported to the IRS. If you go to the bank and deposit $10,000 in cash, then a receipt will get generated, a report, and sent to the IRS saying, this man just walked in and deposited $10,000, or this gal. And sometimes other transactions will as well. But cash transactions, everyone's known this for years, cash transactions. And so if you walk into the bank and deposit 9999, but not 10, and do that repeatedly, they're going to say, well, you're structuring to avoid the reporting requirements. So everyone knows there's a reporting requirement, $10, but that's for the transaction. You simply having money in your possession in that amount is not illegal. Now, if you cross an international border into or out of the United States, then you have to report it as well. And so if you've ever crossed the border, if you're flying back from Europe, for instance, on the airplane, they hand the things out and say, fill this form out to go through customs. One of the questions on there is, are you carrying cash of $10,000 or more? Check the box yes and understand they're going to quiz you about it and there's going to be a report written. If you say no, better not have more than $10,000 of cash on you. But the point is, this man's traveling domestically from Alaska to Vegas. Last time I checked, I think Alaska's a state. Count the stars in the flag. If you've got a modern flag, it'll have Alaska and Hawaii on it. So the policy makes only a limited amount of sense for international flights. but it makes no sense for a domestic flight from Fairbanks to Las Vegas. The DEA took the money because that's also what it does, apparently automatically, when it comes across cash. Upon information and belief, the DEA follows a practice, policy, or standard operating procedure of seizing or causing to be seized cash carried by travelers in an amount of $5,000 or more. And again, where did $5,000 come from? Is it safe to travel with four? How about $49.99? Or will they say that you're structuring the cash for travel? There's no law against traveling domestically with cash. Cooks was not arrested, was not even accused of crime. His money was carried away by the DEA, and then it just got worse. On March 24th, the day after the money was seized, Cooks requested the money be returned. In May, the DEA issued a notice of seizure and the initiation of its forfeiture proceedings. So then Cooks submitted a claim to the DEA 2 weeks later. On June 11th, and by the way, notice how prompt they are. It took them over a month to respond to the one thing, another month here. The DEA sent Cooks a response acknowledging his claim and saying, the matter has been referred to the judicial district noted above. But of course, there was no judicial district noted above. So Cook and his attorneys tried to figure out what district was handling this, but ran into dead ends. Whenever they got a hold of a person, good luck with that. No one knew what they were talking about. No further information was discovered or provided by the government until January 28th of 2021, almost a year later, when the U.S. Attorney's Office of Alaska informed Cooks there were no pending civil or criminal cases related to the seized $60,000. The attorney's office told Cooks to call the DEA to get your money back. After figuring out the DEA's Fairbanks office was no longer operative, Cook got in touch with the DEA in charge of his case, who told him to call the U.S. Attorney's Office. So the U.S. Attorney Office says, call DEA. The DEA says, call the U.S. Attorney's Office. Have you ever done that before? Were you getting a little circle? A little death spiral? You call them. No, they told me to call you. Well, no, call them back. No, you. According to March 10, 2021 email correspondence between USA Ryan Tanzi and USA Kelly Kavanaugh, these are assistant people at the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they had advised the DEA to give the money back. The email correspondence reveals that the DEA claimed no longer had control of the money and that the United States Marshals needed to be authorized to release funds. So now the Marshals have got it. On March 11th, 2021, we were advised the United States Marshals Service that the USAO declined forfeiture and to please return the funds. The funds were not returned. Meanwhile, everyone in the government keeps getting paid for not doing the one thing requested of them. Emails. Have you had any success in acquiring the letter mentioned that you could return the funds to Mr. Cooks? I have an ACH form from him, but with no instructions. April 21st. Email. Attaching prior communications. Please return the funds. Another email, we need to return it to claimant. We did not pursue forfeiture. Meanwhile, nothing happens. Cooks emails the various government agencies asking for an update. He gets one. The Marshals Service has now decided it was the DEA's problem. Remember, the DEA said call the attorney. And now the marshal is saying to call the DEA. And meanwhile, somebody else says, we are working to get these funds returned to you as soon as possible. But at this time, we do not have the required documentation from... Take a guess. The DEA. And by the way, why has the DEA got the money? There was never any allegations of anything to do with anything that the DEA had been enforcing as an agency. On May 25th, the Marshals Service decided that Cooks needed to fill out another set of forms to get his money back. He completed the new paperwork and returned it to the Marshals Service that same day. Another month passed with no return. Cooks approached the USMS again, Marshals Service, and was told the problem was the DEA. On June 22nd, the U.S. Marshals Service responded, I've yet to receive official instruction from the DEA instructing his return. I'm still working with them to try and obtain this, as there are a few holdups on their end that have to be solved first. Everyone is saying you can have your money back. But no one is saying that we're going to give you your money back. See, that's where the misunderstanding is. I'm not laughing because this is funny. It's sad. This is really sad. But I'm laughing because there is an element of stupidity and ignorance here that is bordering on comical. Because the people who are holding this man's money don't care about the fact they're holding his money. And $60,000, I don't know about you, but to me, that'd be a little bit of money. I'd miss the $60,000. And I bet it didn't help when he got to Vegas, even though Vegas has no reason for money. Someone is going to comment, so I'll ruin the joke right now. If he'd gone to Vegas, he might have lost it playing craps, right? Oh, he would have had more fun, though. That all was followed by messages from two other agencies claiming no one in the U.S. Attorney's Office had access to the money, so they're unable to speed this up. That's as inexplicable as the original seizure. So this is the Consolidated Asset Tracking System. They've actually got an acronym, CATS, for the Consolidated Asset Tracking System. They consolidated their asset tracking into a system because apparently they've got so many assets to track that have been consolidated into the system. It's been in use since 1993 and is used by all DOJ components, including the DEA, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the DOJ's multiple U.S. attorneys' offices. So, in sum, the government has held on to Cook's money for 16 months, despite clearly stating it has no interest in keeping it. Maybe this is just the side effects of the bureaucratic ineptitude often seen in sprawling organizations whose reach exceeds their grasp. Great line. See the movie The Prestige for more. If you haven't seen it already, stop the video right now. Go watch it. Come back. I'll wait. It's worth it. Trust me. Or maybe this is just the DEA hoping that if it ignores this long enough, they'll be able to keep the money it already has said it was going to return. Meanwhile, whatever the underlying reason, it's 100% BS. And the man who wrote the article did not spell that out. In initials, he actually spelled the whole word out. BS. And I agree with him. I just keep it clean because this is a family channel. And besides, everyone just went to watch Prestige, so no one's left. But it's an amazing story. They took $60,000 from a man who was traveling simply because he was traveling to Vegas with cash. Again, what on earth would someone do with cash in Vegas? So it's a crazy story. I hate to even throw any more adjectives at this one. I'm wasting them. But everyone understands this. And so civil asset forfeiture is wrong on so many levels. But this right here is one of the poster children for what's wrong with it. The idea that they took this guy's money for no reason, can't explain why they took it in the first place, and now when they kind of realize they can't hang on to it, can't really give it back either because we're not really sure whose job it is to give it back. Why not cut the man a check today and figure that out later? Why not? So, crazy story. Man sues multiple DOJ agencies for failing to return seized cash they told him they had no interest in keeping. Tim Cushing wrote it for TechDirt.com. TechDirt.com is a great, great website. I love them. Joe Sennett, thanks a lot. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Can I use a lifeline? Is not an appropriate response when answering questions from the media.